Grubhub's $7.3 billion takeover is complete, and now the firm gets a new CEO as its co-founder takes on a new role. And an Illinois privacy law that has tangled Facebook, Six Flags, and other companies up in years-long lawsuits with multi-million dollar settlements is now threatening McDonald's efforts to reduce drive-through times. Crane's reporter Ali Marotti joins the podcast today with more.
It's really interesting because though it came about in 2008, some of the litigation started probably 5 or 6 years ago. And finally, just within the past year, we started seeing the conclusion of some of these lawsuits. There's a little bit of precedent now.
I'm Amy Guth, and this is Crane's Daily Gist for Wednesday, June 16th. When it comes to a professional like your doctor or lawyer, you want someone who knows you well. Wintrust believes you should have the same relationship with your banker, someone you can call directly and know they'll understand your concerns. Thousands of local business owners called their Wintrust banker when they needed Paycheck Protection Program loans. They called, Wintrust answered, and helped more than 11,000 local businesses secure funding. Learn more at wintrust.com/dailygist. Member FDIC. So an Illinois privacy law that has involved Facebook and Six Flags and some other companies in years-long lawsuits with multi-million dollar settlements, well, that law is now threatening McDonald's effort to reduce its drive-through times. There's a lot in that sentence. I'm joined now by Crane's reporter, Ali Marotti. Where do we start unpacking that sentence, Ali? There's a lot going on there. Let's start with this law. Tell me about this law in particular.
It's a 2008 law, and it's one of the strictest of its kind in the country, and it protects consumers' biometric information, which is basically fingerprint scans, facial maps. So think about like tagging features on social media, iris scans, which sounds a little James Bondy, but a lot of employers use those sort of things like the fingerprints and the iris to like check in and time out kind of things. This law protects that and it lets consumers sue as opposed to governmental entities. So because of that, Illinois has really been kind of a hotbed of legal activity around this. You mentioned Facebook, Six Flags, a lot of their tech companies, Shutterfly, you know, have come under fire for this law. It's really interesting because though it came about in 2008, some of the litigation started probably 5 or 6 years ago. And finally, just within the past year, we started seeing the conclusion of some of these lawsuits. There's a little bit of precedent now.
And I remember the Facebook one that was biometric data about facial recognition. What was happening at Six Flags?
Six Flags, it was a little kid went there on a school trip, I believe it was, and had to scan his fingerprint to get in. And his mom ended up suing Six Flags for not getting the consent. The thing with the law is that these companies that are collecting this information, they can still collect it. They just need to let consumers know that they're collecting it, tell them how long they're going to store it for and what they're going to use it for. So basically, if they get the right legal, you know, consent form in there and get consumers to just click an I agree thing, as long as they have that wording right that abides by the law, they can do that kind of stuff. But a lot of these companies didn't know about the law, that sort of thing. It's kind of like become a consumer watchdog type of a situation. But the Facebook one was definitely huge. I mean, it was $650 million settlement, and that went to Illinois Facebook users. So very consumer focused. A lot of people became aware of it. That's still delayed. They haven't paid that out yet. But the Six Flags one was also something that a lot of people were watching. And one of the big things was like, does there have to be harm for the consumer around this, right? Like, why are people worried about this information getting stolen? And I think that's a big question to think about with this. And, you know, you think about how many times have you gotten your credit card stolen? You know, even social security numbers get stolen, but those sorts of things can be changed. You can't change your fingerprints. You can't change the map of your face. So that's why a lot of privacy advocates kind of are really big proponents of this law. This, you know, story that we're talking about today with McDonald's is a little bit interesting because it deals with actually your voice print, it's called. So tracking kind of the fluctuations of your voice and linking it to your identity. And that's something that's also covered with this biometric law.
It's so fascinating. And so how does the voice print factor into what McDonald's is trying to do around drive-through times?
Yeah, so McDonald's for a few years now has been trying to reduce its drive-through times. And the ways they've done it include, you know, streamlining the menu, taking off the complicated items so that just people can get through faster. And that really paid off during the pandemic when they didn't have anybody that could come into the restaurants. Everybody was going through the drive-through. The executives have pointed to growth, you know, same-store sales growth because they got people through the drive-through quicker. So they're kind of doubling down on that, and they're rolling out new technology into their drive-thrus. And some of that is geofencing type stuff that if you, you know, do an order, it'll notify the worker that you're there and they can run it out to you. One of the things they've implemented, according to this lawsuit, is voice automated ordering. So it talks in the lawsuit about this. And one of the big questions about, you know, whether this lawsuit has teeth or not is exactly what this technology does, which we don't, you know, quite know yet. Like, it's going to kind of, that is what will play out in the discovery of this. But basically what the lawsuit alleges is that it ties consumers' identities to their voice, you know, and it looks at license plate scanning, it knows who you are, it knows what your previous order was. And this is kind of where the reducing drive-through times come in. Like, if I pull up, I order, it recognizes my voice, it recognizes my license plate, it knows that I normally order a Big Mac, it'll pull that order up and be like, do you want what you last ordered, kind of thing. So this lawsuit alleges that McDonald's is violating Illinois' Biometric Privacy Act by doing that. It's not notifying customers what they're doing with that information, that they're collecting it, or how long they'll store it.
That's so interesting. In your reporting around this, you talked with a professor at Northwestern's Pritzker School of Law about how much of this lawsuit will depend on exactly how the technology works, if it's just transcribing versus storing. And that's so interesting. I think it's another example of, you know, we kind of keep getting into these moments where behavior hasn't really caught up to, like, the law hasn't quite caught up to consumer behavior or what's possible with technology. That's so interesting.
For sure. And this law is so fascinating. I used to cover technology, you know, back in my previous job before I was covering restaurants and retail. And the big question that I was fascinated with this is sort of like, do consumers care, you know, like, and how much do they care, right? Because there were instances where, I don't know if you guys remember this a few years ago, but Google rolled out that app where you could upload a photo of your face and it would show you what picture of art, what famous artwork you look like.
Right.
And it didn't roll out in Illinois. And I remember everybody was sort of like, oh, am I doing this wrong? Like, this is obviously a user error. What happened was Google chose not to roll that out in Illinois because they didn't want to violate this law. Now, the interesting part is the consumer attitude toward privacy, right? And toward their data privacy, which we see all the time online. You know, it's sort of like a few years ago, there was sort of this big reckoning with people saying like, oh my God, Facebook knows that I dated this person or that I went to this place for college. And it's like, well, yeah, you told Facebook all that information. But then we saw a lot, you know, there's a big consumer privacy law that's out there now. A lot of these tech companies have to, like, you know, get consent from people for more things. But there's kind of this nexus between, like, how much do you as a consumer want to use this fun technology? And do you care enough about your privacy not to use it? You know, and for so far, I mean, for the past few years, people don't seem to care enough for a lot of these cases. You know, like, would you rather get your Big Mac faster, or would you worry that someone might steal your voice? You know, I mean, it's just, it's not something we've seen a lot of harm done to people. We haven't heard a lot of, like, data breaches where your face map got stolen or whatever. So people don't really have that real world example to be worried about. And a lot of the alarm is being raised by these people that are, like, in the privacy, you know, privacy advocates and sort of in that community. So I just think it's a really interesting kind of situation that goes on with how comfortable people are using new technology and how much they know about it.
Totally agreed. And it seems like it's often a trade-off between convenience and privacy.
Oh, 100%.
And it seems like we keep seeing examples of people who are rather okay with, hey, I would rather have, you know, my order be ready at McDonald's when I am, than, you know, then, and okay, so if that means you have my voice, fine. I think more and more we see kind of this reckoning between convenience and privacy. That's fascinating.
Yep, it is. And I think, like, I mean, there's a whole faction of people out there that, like, wouldn't worry about it, right? Like, that want these technological advances, want technology to make things more convenient for them, think that that's the whole point of technology. And so the privacy aspect of it, you know, there's also people that are sort of like, I mean, everything about me is out there, you know, whatever. And that's valid, you know, that's a valid argument that people make. And I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with this lawsuit. And if it does, you know, it might end up getting dismissed. We don't know. You know, we'll see what McDonald's has to say about it. They haven't replied in the lawsuit yet, so we don't know kind of what their comeback is going to be. So we'll see. We'll see if this technology even does use it. It could just be a voice to text, like you said earlier, right? Which would just transcribe what you're saying and take the order down, which could maybe just, like, reduce staffing in the drive-thru. We just don't know that much about it yet. So I think we'll have to wait and see.
Well, McDonald's issued a statement on Tuesday afternoon saying this technology was specifically developed and deployed in a way that does not identify any customers. And the allegations in this complaint demonstrate a misrepresentation of the technology and its purpose. We intend to fully defend against these claims in court. I know you'll be watching this story closely. Thanks so much, Allie.
Yeah, for sure.
Coming up, the rebound in travel has United saying it's now not likely to cut workers when federal pandemic aid ends. We'll talk about that and more right after this. Here's a great way to stay in touch with Crane's Daily Gist. Subscribe to the Crane's Morning 10. It's our daily newsletter featuring the 10 biggest stories of the day. To subscribe, visit chicagobusiness.com/morning10.
This is the Crane's Daily Gist with Amy Guth.
Adam DeWitt is becoming CEO of Grubhub after the company's $7.3 billion merger has closed with JustEatTakeaway.com. Grubhub founder and CEO Matt Maloney is expected to join the four-member management board of its new Amsterdam-based parent company. He'll be involved with global strategy and oversee the North American market. The Grubhub brand will stay in North America, but its signature red color will switch to Just Eat Takeaway's orange. Grubhub was founded in 2004 by Maloney and Matt Evans, merged with New York-based rival Seamless in 2013 and went public a year later. DeWitt joined Grubhub as CFO in 2011 and became president in 2018. Boeing's Political Action Committee resumed giving to federal candidates and committees in May after a three-month pause, including donations to members who opposed certifying the 2020 election results for President Joe Biden. The Chicago-based aerospace company joined dozens of other companies on January 13th in announcing that they would suspend and review their PAC donations in the wake of the January 6th insurrection by supporters of then-President Donald Trump. But beginning on May 3rd, Boeing gave out nearly $900,000 to political committees and candidates, according to its most recent filing with the Federal Election Commission. Let's take a look at some numbers. So among the sitting lawmakers who received $5,000, which is the maximum amount that a PAC can give per election, were House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy of California, Minority Whip Stephen Scalise of Louisiana, and Representative Vicky Hartzler of Missouri. Receiving $2,500, Representative Jack Bergman, a Michigan Republican who also voted against election certification. All four of those lawmakers were among the 147 Republicans who voted against certifying Electoral College votes for Biden in alignment with Trump's inaccurate claim that the 2020 election was rigged. But Democratic politicians also received contributions from Boeing. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Majority Whip Jim Clyburn each got $5,000 for their primary campaigns, while Majority Leader Steny Hoyer got $5,000 for his primary race and $5,000 for the general election. Boeing's PAC also gave $25,000 to the Republican Attorneys General Association. An affiliate of the group, the Rule of Law Defense Fund, helped organize protests on January 6th that preceded the events at the Capitol, paying for robocalls urging Trump supporters to attend the so-called Stop the Steal rally. The PAC's biggest donations went to the Republican Governors Association, which got $200,000, and the Senate and House arms of the Democratic and Republican parties, each of which got $105,000, also the maximum that a PAC can give a party committee per year. Boeing's PAC and employees were the 77th largest source of campaign contributions in the 2020 election cycle, that according to the Center for Responsive Politics. The Senate Leadership Fund, a super PAC aligned with Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, was the biggest recipient with $790,000. Biden was second, receiving just over $726,000, followed by Trump, who got just over $600,000. Canadian marijuana company Cronos Group paid $110 million to acquire a stake in Chicago-based PharmaCann. PharmaCann is one of the largest marijuana companies that remains private. The money will go to shareholders, not the company, which operates retail shops and cultivation facilities in six states. And it's the second recent deal in which marijuana company insiders have sold stock. Chicago-based Green Thumb Industries, a publicly traded company, sold $50 million of stock held by a private investment vehicle controlled by CEO and founder Ben Kovler. Under the terms of the PharmaCann deal, Toronto-based Kronos has the option to acquire a 10.5% stake in the company based on several factors, including, quote, the status of U.S. federal cannabis legalization, as well as regulatory approvals, including in the states where PharmaCann operates. If Kronos exercises the option, it will enter into a partnership in which the two companies can offer each other's products. The industry has been closely watching PharmaCann since its $682 million deal to be acquired by Los Angeles-based MedMen was called off. But PharmaCann also plans to go public, says CEO Brent Novy. But unlike other marijuana companies that have gone public in Canada through reverse takeovers, he wants to go public in the U.S. Companies that grow or sell marijuana aren't listed on U.S. stock exchanges because marijuana is still illegal under federal law. And it's unclear when that might change, but GTI and Chicago-based Cresco Labs have each prepared for it by making regulatory filings with the SEC. PharmaCann has license to operate in Illinois, as well as Ohio, Maryland, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, and New York. It's one of a handful of Chicago-based companies with licenses to grow and sell marijuana in New York, which recently said it will legalize recreational marijuana sales. The increasing rebound in travel means that United Airlines is now unlikely to furlough workers when the latest round of federal COVID aid funding runs out this fall. Carriers are ramping up quickly as more people get vaccines and start to travel again. TSA recently reported 2 million travelers passing through its checkpoints at airports around the country for the first time since the onset of the pandemic. But that 2 million is still about 26% below pre-pandemic levels. Nonetheless, United told flight attendants in a June 11th memo, quote, "We will not need to furlough flight attendants assigned to active, open in-flight bases again this fall when the current payroll support program funding ends on October 1st. CNBC reported United made a similar pledge to ramp workers and customer service agents. As for pilots, they previously reached a no-furlough deal last fall. In a statement, the president of the Association of Flight Attendants Union said, quote, "This announcement makes it clear the payroll support program worked." She continued by saying, "In every previous crisis where airlines took major losses, workers and passengers paid the price. Airlines cut jobs, pay and benefits for workers, while bankruptcies and consolidation meant more fees and less options for passengers." And that's Crane's Daily Gist for now. Our continuous news feed lives at chicagobusiness.com. Thanks so much to our guest today, Crane's reporter, Ali Marati. Be sure to subscribe to these conversations on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your audio on demand. And find hashtag Crane's Daily Gist on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And let's continue talking there about these and other business stories. Our show is produced by Todd Manley at Earsight Studios. I'm Amy Guth. Thanks so much for listening. And I'll meet you right back here next time.